I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Spotlight On. I'm your host, Chelsea Overacker, and joined today in studio, I have Brooke Starnell.
What's up, guys?
Hey, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. This is crazy.
Yeah, this is a crazy. Nice studio.
Yeah.
Well, Brooks here has been on The Young and the Restless, Shadowhunters, and he was most recently seen in Hallmark's Christmas movie, A Christmas Miracle. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get you in studio before Christmas, but it's all right. You're here
it
now.
Yeah, it didn't work out. I mean, Christmas time is so crazy, you know?
It is. I feel like, especially with the Hallmark Channel, they always celebrate Christmas.
Always.
They have like every Friday night. Did you know they have a Christmas movie?
Yeah.
So
they're nuts. Like, especially being in the family now, you see how much, you know, they're Christmas.
Yes.
I mean, it's not really Christmas without Hallmark.
Absolutely. Well, we'll get more into that movie. But first, I want to talk about your background. You have an interesting background. You've taken an interest in performing at a young age, mm-hmm. and you're very talented at memorizing monologues, I must say.
Yes, but even before soaps. That's the crazy thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my mom. Thank you.
Yes.
Also, Mom, you're going to see this. Everybody, I want you to know that my mom became an actress at 60 years of age.
What did she star in?
She didn't star in anything yet, but as soon as I produce something, I'm putting her in it. But
okay.
She actually just did a commercial. She
Good
did a commercial.
For her.
She's still in Ohio, but she's working out of Ohio, which is extremely difficult. So, Mommy, I'm proud of you. Keep going. I think about you all the time, even though we don't talk as much as you would like. I'm thinking about you.
That is so sweet that you gave your mom a shout out.
Yeah, of course.
Was she supportive of you going into acting right away then?
Yeah. She was supportive at a young age. And I actually just recently talked to my dad. And, you know, I used to dance a lot. And that was my thing, you know. And I was talking to my dad, and, you know, he's like, you should have kept dancing. I'm like, yeah, but I got tired. He's like, yeah, you know, we put you in the dance and had you start dancing because you had so much energy. Mm-hmm. And then we made you start entertaining us. And then I stopped dancing because I got tired of entertaining and being a performance monkey.
Really? What songs did you like to dance to?
Anything that made my foot tap. I mean, from MC Hammer to Michael Jackson to Bobby Brown to anything, man.
What are your top favorite Michael Jackson songs that you like to dance to?
Back then, it was Smooth Criminal and Bad. But as I got older, I kind of like Dirty Diana.
Yeah.
I mean, I still like Bad and Smooth Criminal and Billie Jean. But
Billie Jean.
Yeah, oh, man. I mean, just what they created, you know, him and Berry Gordy. And it stands the test of time, man. I could put it on right now, and it still sounds new.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. So you still can you still dance just like you were in a young age?
I won't say that. I won't say that. But, I mean, some of the stuff I still remember, but now you pretty much just probably make fun of me if I started dancing.
No, that's definitely not. I think I would be impressed by it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So at age 16 is when you signed with a talent agency and you entered a talent showcase in New York City where you competed with over 400 contestants.
Yes.
And you placed third.
Third, yes.
Yeah.
I think that's third. Second runner-up is third, right?
Yeah. Well, how was that competition for you?
Well, I actually went there for, like, modeling and dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't want to do the monologue thing because I was like, you know, I'm popping a lock in it, and that's my whole thing.
Good, yeah. Even though you were good at the monologues, you didn't want to do it.
No. My mom made me because it was a whole thing you had to do. You know, it wasn't just one. You know, you had to do everything,
mm-hmm.
right? So they did print work. They did runway. They did you could do dance and you could do monologue and something else. I forget. And I was like, Mommy, I don't want to do the monologue thing. She's like, no, you're doing it. So we created a monologue and, we worked on it for months. And then I get, I get there and I'm like, I ain't doing that monologue. I'm doing something else. So I just kind of went right off the cuff and just improvised. I kind of did half the monologue and improvised. And, you know, my mom was like, are you kidding me? We just worked on that thing and you just, you know. And there we go.
Wow. Yeah. Very impressive.
So just following that artistic heart, artistic feeling, you know?
You had it naturally.
Yeah.
And then you got invited to study at a theater in San Francisco.
Yes. So what they do is after this thing, this competition or whatever you want to call it, showcase, they have agents there, whether it's modeling, print, mm-hmm. or talent, or dance studios and schools. And at the time, I was playing sports back home, and they had offered a partial scholarship to come study at the conservatory theater. And, you know, I was excited, but I was like, man, I want to dance or do, you know, modeling, because that's the thing, right? And I was like, let me talk to my parents. And my dad was like, hey, I don't know nothing about that modeling and dancing stuff, man, but they're paying for your school for sports, so that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the decision that was made. And
that was cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you're involved in sports.
Heavily.
Yeah, you did gymnastics growing up.
Well,
were you a gymnast?
You know, what happens is you say these things and then somebody reads it and then they just run off with it.
Right.
You know, not a gymnast. My mom was a gymnast. And she caught me trying to do backflips and was like, let me teach this boy how to do a backflip before he breaks his neck. So my mom would teach me how to do backflips in the basement on this little mat thing we had. And once I learned, you know, I was just doing backflips all the time off of anything. I would run up a wall and do a backflip. I would do it off a fence, off a tree, off a doghouse, off a roof.
Wow.
You know, I was that kind of kid. So no, I'm not a gymnast, but yes, I do flip off of crap.
Okay. The reason I wanted to bring up gymnastics, cause I did gymnastics for 16 years.
No, I'm like, you're 16 probably compares to my 16 minutes.
No, but the backflips, I got you. Similar story. I kept doing backflips all the time. I was in karate class. Mom's like, okay, you're going to break your neck. So mm-hmm. Let's just enroll you in. And after that, the rest is history, but it's cool that your mom did gymnastics. Did she do all four events too?
I don't know.
The bars, the balance beam, floor exercise, vault?
I have no clue.
Okay.
I have no clue. I know she did gymnastics, and she was a hurdler, and I ended up hurdling too, which is
really?
Crazy. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
And then you did football too as well.
Football, baseball, basketball, and track.
You're all into it.
Yeah.
I did track and field. I did the 100 with the hurdles.
Yeah.
And then the 400.
So you
too.
Did the 110 hurdles?
Yeah.
Nice, man. Yeah. Yo, those things, man, if you can do hurdles, you can write your ticket.
Yeah.
Anybody can run, but not everybody can run and jump.
No, that was challenging. And it took, for me, the gymnast, I kept going over it very gracefully. And
you gotta.
Yeah, the track coach was like, that's not going to fly here. Move step.
That's right. Three in between.
Yes, just keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then you did pre-med. You're a pre-med student, too, as
yes,
well.
Yes, let's use that pre-med loosely, please.
Okay.
I my mother coming up, you know, was like, listen, you have three choices. You could be a doctor, a lawyer, or a judge. So my brothers and I were like, okay. You know, I was like, well, who makes the most money? And I was like, all right, so I'll be a doctor. And, you know, coming out of school, I focused more on sports and girls than I did school. So once I got to school, you know, once I got to college, it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I didn't know how to study. I didn't prepare to be able to do that. But so my first year and a half, 2 years, was just literally buried in the books. And I was like, this is for the birds. This is not me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had no idea, especially where I come from in Ohio. They don't push the arts. So I had no idea that you can get a BA or you can go to school for theater or you can go to be a director or a PA or production designer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or an actor. Had no clue. So I just did that and, you know, just did what my parents told me to do.
How long did pre-med last for you?
Literally like a year and a half, if that.
Okay, I have a similar background. Same story. I was only pre-med for a year and a half, and then I switched over to communications.
And here we are.
So, yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's crazy how things just work. Like,
yeah.
You know, follow your heart. It's crazy how if you follow your heart, you'll find that.
That path,
you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, and let's say I would have become a doctor. Would I have been a good doctor? Maybe. Would I have been a passionate doctor? Nyeh. You know, so follow your hearts.
Yeah, good advice.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were doing modeling mm-hmm. and you signed with BMG Models in Chicago. After that, you wanted to relocate to Canada to pursue acting.
Yes, it was kind of a, there's a couple of reasons. One of them I won't get into. But one of them is, you know, it's more of a, it's a smaller pool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still get, you know, there's still a lot of U.S. productions that shoot there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured I can make a bigger splash faster if I go to Canada.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then yeah. Moving out to L.A. And, you know, it's, you know, I come out here and jump in the pool with everybody else, or I could go there and build a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And get solid credits and then come and you know, so I still kind of had that A-type personality where I think things out. You know,
yeah.
I'm super artistic, but I also have that you know, which is good because you need it in business to be able to kind of look at the grand scheme of things and figure out, okay, this is the path that I want to take, but also be malleable enough to know when you're on that path to kind of deviate when you need to.
And that's impressive because I feel like a lot of people have a hard time moving out to California, LA, because they're away from home, but you went to Canada.
I couldn't wait to get out here once I knew it was time for me to come out here.
Yeah.
I could not wait. I mean, Toronto is nice, it's beautiful, Montreal beautiful, Vancouver beautiful, Canadians are wonderful people, super multicultural. It's, you know, even though it's above us, it's sometimes light years away from, mm-hmm. the, you know, the two cultures or two countries. But once it was time for me to come here, I was like, you know, I was ready because I felt like I could make an impact and mm-hmm. not come here and have to, you know, become a waitress, which is nothing wrong with it, but, you know, become a waiter or a bartender and blah, 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 and do that whole grind. I figured I could bypass 3 or 4 years if I went to Canada first.
Okay. And you feel like that was the best train that you could have gotten over there.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what I had, you know, it was either there in New York, you know, being theater trained or classically trained, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. Those are kind of the two places that you want to get that foundation. Mm-hmm. And Toronto still had this New York feel, but it was a more close-knit community. So I got more of a one-on-one with the coaches that I studied with. And a lot of them taught here, taught New York, would teach Toronto. And so I got more of a one-on-one with a lot of the, you know, upcoming brilliant coaches to be able to really hone the craft in more of a smaller setting.
Mm. Do you ever want to go back to Canada?
Of course, of course. We just shot okay. Hallmark, Christmas Miracle. We shot that in Vancouver. I shot Shadowhunters in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So I know that I'm going to be constantly going back and forth.
Going back between LA and Canada.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Very cool. So you mentioned this with soap operas, mm-hmm. and you played Nate Hastings on Y&R, and I love Y&R. I'm a huge fan
really?
Of it. Yeah, Victor Newman, Cher Newman, Nick Newman, that was my show back in the day.
Okay.
And every soap opera star that I interview, they always say, okay, that was good training for us because you have to memorize 50 pages.
Yeah.
And you mentioned when you did a monologue that you already had that skill naturally. But going into a soap opera, do you think that was even better training for you? Because it's a very fast-paced
yeah.
environment.
Yeah, it's you know, that little monologue that I did, me and my mom worked on that for months. So,
yeah.
you know, I think what really helped is sports. Sports helps because it has you divide your time and attention between mm-hmm. doing multiple things. But that helped, but also coming up in a theater and doing plays. So, you know, now that we're, you know, I'm, you know, here and, you know, we do a lot of scenes, you know, so stuff is shot in scenes, whereas a play, you have to work on the whole play and the whole character arc and the travel of the character throughout the whole play. So you have to put that into perspective. And on soap operas, there is no end game.
Right.
You know, so when you're working, you're working not in a linear fashion, but in an overall arc. So that helps in the sense that you have to learn how to just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. The stamina is there. And yeah, you get a crap ton of pages. You know, I remember one time I had, I think I had like 20 pages of my own. And then one of our cast members didn't show up for whatever reason. And I had to learn his 20 pages or so.
Wow.
Within an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had 40 pages, you know. So my assistant, you know, I told her, like, hey, you got to get down here. She had a day off. And I was like, no, you got to get in. And we just, you know, hit the pages. And, you know, everything just kind of kicks in at that point. You know, you keep it in your back pocket. But once that happened, I just, you know, and I was able to do it. It was actually, if you guys are Y&R fans, it was the courtroom scene.
Yeah.
Where I think Lily was going to jail and Devon was trying to send her to jail. It was 2 days before and 2 days after that whole, we did that whole scene. That was the one where I had 40 pages to do and 20 of them I had to do in an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you had an assistant that helped you, but so that just comes naturally to you with or is there like a skill that you have to develop over time, kind of like when training, when you're doing sports?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, a lot of people think when you memorize something, you take it and you're just here and you just go line by line by line. And that's not how I don't know how other actors, I've heard of actors and actresses, mm-hmm. you know, learning rote.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I don't digest it like that. I digest it better when I know how I feel about it and I know the progression of why I feel the way I feel. It just helped me put it in. And I get those feelings and I know, okay, this comes after that, that comes after this. And it just, I just digest it easy. I don't know how, but that's kind of the beginning of the process for me.
Did your character have any big emotional scenes where you just had to cry or you really had to put yourself into a different place?
They were getting to it.
They were getting to it.
They were getting to it before I left the show. So they were getting to, there was this, well, when Michelle left, she that was a big part of the triangle. Michelle left, and then when Christoph passed, that was a big part of the triangle that I was incorporated into. So a lot of that, you know, they were building, you know, our animosity, our attraction, me and Christoph's relationship, Neil, for those of you, they were building all of that. And then I was going to have, you know, I talk about my ex-wife, ex-girlfriend, and how I let her die and blah, blah, blah. So we were literally at the cusp, and there were a lot of changes that were happening that I can't get into. But, yeah, so long story, yeah, we were getting into it.
Wow.
We were getting into it. And I look forward to it, but, again, you know, I'm not the writer. I'm just the vessel.
Well, speaking of Christoph, this has been a year anniversary since his passing.
We miss you, man.
Yeah.
We miss you.
How was it working with him?
You know, when you show up on a set, especially a soap opera where people have been there for some people 40 years, 30 years, you know, you're not nervous, but it's like walking into a fraternity. You're like, okay, what to expect now? You know, is there like a, you know, a hazing process? There's not a hazing process, but like, you know, where did the rookies eat? And you know what I mean? And some people had been there. I think the closest guy had been there 6-8 months before me. So, you know, you get kind of nervous, and Christoph knew that. You know, you're like, okay, and it's totally different than being on set. You know, the director's over a loudspeaker. You know, we shoot one or two takes. You switch between sets. There's a set here, there's a set there. You turn around and go to that one. You know, whereas, you know, on an actual, you know, where there's TV and it's not a sitcom, but you're shooting a movie, it's totally different. The speed is different, the pacing. You don't do 60 pages in a day, 70 pages in a day. You do 4 or 3. And he knew that. So he came up and, you know, come from the theater, so very, you know, I'm my character. And, you know, and he's like, listen, lighten up, man. It ain't that serious. And it took me a while to lighten up because, you know, you want to bring it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They cast me to bring gravity to the soap opera. That's what I was told by the producers, that, you know, you have a gravity about you. That's why we want you on this thing, is to kind of ground the soap opera more. So I had that in my head. I have to ground this thing. And Christoph was like, dude, lighten up. And that's one thing I remember. And from then on, between him and Eric Braden, who plays Victor, you know, those two were kind of my mentors on the show. They would, you know, we would talk about sports, or Christoph and I would talk about his restaurant that he was opening. And, you know, it was just fun with them guys, man.
Yeah.
You know, those are two of the guys that I really miss is Eric and Christoph.
And just seeing all the stars from Young and Restless post this week about Christoph, I could tell that you guys were all a very close family.
Yeah. You know what? And that's the thing. You know, sometimes I feel bad that I don't post enough about Christoph on social media, or that I didn't post at all. And, it's I think this is a good time to address it, is because I just had so much respect for him. I think it's bigger than just going on social media for the sake of your own shine.
Yeah.
And using somebody's passing away and saying that you're saying it for them, but it's on your social media. It for me personally, you know, I held him so dear after we met that I kind of don't want to, I don't say disgrace him like that, but, you know, just cheapen it.
Yeah.
You know, he was loved. There's no denying that. I don't need to sit here and, you know, do this whole thing.
He knows.
He knows.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
Hey, AfterBuzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
All right, let's lighten it up.
let's lighten up a little bit. Yes, I'm like, oh man.
See, that's what I'm saying. You got to lighten me up.
Okay, well, let's get all feel good.
Yeah, let's get feel good.
Hallmark is the perfect way to do that.
There we go.
Well, let's talk about A Christmas Miracle. I just have to ask, how was it working with Tamara Mori Housley in A Christmas Miracle?
It was horrible. I hated it. Every minute of it. No. She's so horrible to work with. No, she's so nice, man. Like, she's the type of person, I don't care how bad your day is. I don't care how, you could just, somebody just told you you won a lottery and then they told you, oops, it was a mistake. She would just brighten up your day. I don't care what's happening. She's just the type of person that she's, what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. She's bubbly. Nothing gets her down. I remember her kids came on set, Aiden and Araya, and she was looking forward to them coming on set. It was a busy day for us. We were right in the middle of like, I think we were like probably like an hour behind, and Adam came, her husband came with the kids, and she was excited to see him. But we had, you know, four pages that we had to do in 5 minutes, and she you can just see the stress in her eyes, but she wouldn't let it come out. You know, whereas me is, I'm like,
what's going on here? Yeah, same here.
And she was very just, boop, and just, you know, did what she had to do. And she was great with the kids. And, you know, we would try to help her, you know, her assistant would try to help her. And, you know, you just can't tell with her that she's going through anything because she's so positive.
That's good. Yeah. I love her from Sister.
Don't we all?
Yes. Favorite. And it's so cool that you got to work with her. That had to be just such a great experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun.
How long does it take to film those Hallmark movies?
3 weeks.
So you get all done in three weeks.
Man, they pump them things out.
Oh,
3 weeks.
Gosh.
That's I don't know if they've ever gone over 3 weeks, but Hallmark is a well-oiled machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know their product. They know their audience. They know, you know, they have everything in place. Actually, The one of the locations we shot at, I did that in my first movie.
Really?
With Hallmark. Yeah, I was like, I know this. Where? How did I? What? Oh, that's where I did the movie here. They know their business, man.
And I feel like once you get in a Hallmark movie, you're kind of like family, where they like to have you in other projects as well.
We're already talking about it.
Okay. Is there anything that you could say right now?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. We actually have some stuff that we're going to take to Hallmark. Some Christmas stuff and some other stuff. I don't know. You know, it's up to the execs over there. I think they're brilliant. I think that they work for the brand.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's something that we haven't seen on Hallmark before. And Hallmark is really doing well with bringing up the diversity in their slates of their Christmas stuff.
Huge.
And, you know, and that's one thing that I can say is, you know, when they sent it over to Tamara and her and I talked about it, she said, you know, I've been working with Hallmark or trying to work with Hallmark for a while, and she really wanted to push the diversity. And I'm just so thankful that Tamara greenlit, because she produced this, she had to greenlight, okay, I like Brooks. And that Hallmark was on board to kind of let her have carte blanche on the story and what she wanted to say, and, you know, and that she chose me to be her partner in crime. So they're really doing good. And
she casted you for this project?
Well, I won't say she cast me. You know, they had a list of guys that they liked, and they took the list to her, and she said, I like that guy. And they said, okay, we'll see if he's available. And they said, are you available? And I said, let me check. I checked. And I said yes, and then we worked out the terms, and then
it went from there.
Yeah, I was actually in Vancouver when I met Tamara. Usually you meet your co-star before, and I met her. Things happened, so it happened in a week, everything.
Wow.
Yeah, everything happened in a week.
I like how you mentioned diversity in Hallmark, because I know a few comments have been made that they just do the same type of casting.
Mm-hmm.
You could speak going with Hallmark that they are going a different route, trying to get more diverse characters in there.
They're working on it. They're working on it. They're taking strides to be more diverse. I mean, we're evident of it, you know, having two, because Christmas is their, I'm going to say their golden child, but that's what we know Hallmark to be is Christmas.
Yeah.
So for them to put, you know, Tamara and I as the leads, and then you have Gabe, who played her son, he's biracial. So, you know, the first three leads are of color. It's crazy because Tamir is biracial, Gabe's biracial, and my mom is biracial.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, they're really taking strides, and to have both of us as the leads in a Hallmark movie, it's been done before, but, you know, the whole Christmas thing and then how they pushed it, you know, when they announced it, they announced their Christmas slate with us, mm-hmm. you know, to, in November, they said, hey, you know, here's our Christmas slate, and then we were, you know, the face of that announcement. Just shows that Hallmark is really trying to become more diverse. And, you know, I'll say this to the audience that kind of, you know, gives them slack on that. It's a long process to make a movie, you know. Mm-hmm. So when you say we want Hallmark to be more diverse, it doesn't happen immediately. If you said it 3 years ago, then it's now coming into fruition now.
Right.
So the things that we're working on now, you know, it has to go through a process, you know, whereas, you know, you have a script or you have an idea. And the idea is, okay, we like that idea. Let's get a writer to write it. It takes the time for him to write it. And then you have to take it and take it back to the network. And the network says, okay, we like this, change this. And that may take 6 months. And mm-hmm. then you get producers on board and the producers set up, you know, okay, Vancouver is not, it's going to snow at this time, so we need to do at this time. And it could be a year, 2 years. So mm-hmm. when they say that they're becoming more diverse, it takes time. So give them a little bit of, you know, a little bit of leeway. But they're working on it.
Because they just celebrated their 10th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So we're expecting in the next 10 years, some changes are going to be happening.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. And I'm excited to see what future projects you might have with Hallmark, too.
Yes. And, you know, Hallmark is a small piece of what, you know, I'm doing. You know, I want to do that because it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but my love is drama. It's the gritty drama. And, you know, I always want balance. Life is about balance. So I want to have that to lighten me up, like I said.
Yes.
You know, after I've done my movie or my whatever that's more heavy, you know, and go into a nice feel-good Christmas movie.
Everyone loves that.
Yeah.
So we are in the beginning of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any goals or where you would like to see your career go this year? You did mention you're doing the Hallmark, but you want to do some drama, heavy drama.
Yeah, you know what? My goal is as big as that wall. That's the thing. And,
yeah.
you know, it kind of sometimes is daunting, you know. But so myself, my manager, my team, and production company just optioned about four IP. IP is intellectual property. So four books to turn into movies. Mm-hmm. One of them is called The Romanoff Prophecy, written by Stephen Barry about a black lawyer who on the eve of... the Romanoff Prophecy, the Romanoff family is an actual historical family that were murdered by Lenin and the Boyars, the Bolsheviks in 1918. They were murdered in 1918. And there was a prophecy by Rasputin that that their heirs are actually still living to this day. And this is in real life. So my book is a historical fiction. That sees a black lawyer go over to Russia who speaks fluent Russian and is supposed to they're voting on a new czar, and he's supposed to bolster this czar's stake in Russia, and he ends up stumbling upon this prophecy of Rasputin, and we see him chase throughout Europe, obviously Russia and Poland, and then he comes to the U.S. and I won't tell you the end, but it's a blend between stuff that actually happened and fiction.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that's something you came up with.
No, I didn't come up with it.
Oh, you didn't come up with it?
Well, the writer and I became good friends. And, you know, his mom is a fan of YNR. And that's how I actually got the IP, is that once I reached out, or my team reached out to him, he's like, I know who Brooks Darno is. You know, I watch YNR with my mom. He was like, that's who, you know, if I looked at a Miles Lord, that's Miles Lord. So it went pretty fast. And that's one of the IP. The other one's a thriller that will be in Canada. And I just optioned rights to this TV series called Drafted, which is about it's actually prevalent to this day and age in the social climate we live in. The cops have been overrun. Mm. And the government now enacts a draft to bring civilians into the police force. So now it puts the shoe on the other foot and says, you know, with a lot of police brutality, vice versa. Now the people that you were pointing finger at about, hey, this is how you should be governing us. Now you're the person that has to govern the public. And it's brilliantly written. It's an ensemble cast. I literally just signed last week them to attach me to it. So we're going to be going out to studios and figuring out who wants to make this TV series.
That is
drafted.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That. That's going to be a big project for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's your inspiration when you see other actors? Is there like an actor that inspires you with drama? Because you like to say, when we talked about going with Nate Hastings, you're like, I almost got to that scene where we got to be in this vulnerable moment. Is there any actors that you see right now that are that inspire you to want to pursue that with your own career, with your own art?
No, I won't say any actor or actress that inspires me. You know, what inspires me is a human connection.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to go to that place with somebody else, and that is the vulnerability in it. You know, I don't know you, you don't know me, or we may know each other, but, you know, we literally just got on set, we just met. But to be able to share that experience in that moment in time, because we'll never get it back, you know, mm-hmm. and it's almost like cheating on yourself, you know, and in the sense that you're there, we're connecting, and then we go away to never talk about it again. And then we have another moment, and then another moment. So you're living something totally different with somebody you don't know, and that's the fun in it. So to get back to your question, you know, I look up to the Denzels, I look up to the Will Smiths, I look up to the DiCaprios, or, you know, most recently Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would be doing myself and them a disservice if I said that I wanted to not emulate them, but, you know, their work inspires me to dig deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Their work inspires me to not be light on myself and to say that, you know, you're just as talented as them, but you have to show it and go after the opportunities to be able to show it.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think with these projects that you're signing into, you're definitely going to be able to showcase that connection that you want to get and be able to show that side of you with the acting.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, sometimes, you know, as actors, we get sent stuff and, you know, it's shiny and it's with this studio and it looks good. And, you know, and you want to do those, but you also want to do the ones that artistically feed you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, my Romanoff Prophecy has a blend between both. It's more of like a Dan Brown kind of Da Vinci Code, Bourne Identity thing. But then he also drafted is handling a lot of the social issues that we're going through now and just talking about both sides of the coin, because I think that's what is prevalent and is going to help us move forward as a country, is talking about both sides and understanding both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually discusses both sides of that argument, you know, yeah. The police brutality, but also, you know, from the policeman side. And, you know, it's in this first pilot episode, all that is explored and more. And that's what I really loved about it.
Great. No, that sounds like a really good project for you. So, yeah, I can't wait to see it. I want to talk about an Instagram post.
Let's skip that.
No. That you posted with you at the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go into detail about that?
It was laundry day. I didn't have any shirts, man.
Yeah, because, I mean, when I'm at the piano, I definitely – you know, pose
so,
like that.
So it was laundry day. It was hot. It was laundry day. What other excuses can I make for having my shirt off at the piano? It was laundry day. It was hot. There were like six girls in the foreground. Nah. So it was actually a photo shoot. It was a photo shoot, and there was a piano there, and I was started messing around on the piano, and messing around is all I was doing. Yeah, and he just caught me doing this, and yeah, it was a photo shoot.
Just a photo shoot.
All right. Yeah, I don't have a cameraman all the time hanging around taking pictures of me when I'm doing crap.
No. Well, yeah,
Just sometimes. Yeah.
Well, that's a nice photo.
Yeah, thanks.
But you're into photography yourself, too, a little bit? Do you
yes.
Like to...
Yeah, a lot of it.
A lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I shoot Leica. Black and white. They actually just came out with a nice, and this is maybe dangerous for you to bring this up, because
okay.
I can really get into the spec-heavy stuff.
Okay.
But they just came out with a monochrome, which is just black and white camera, and it's like a 40 megapixel. It's just beautiful. So I think I'm going to sell my color camera. I have a Leica M240. I think I'm going to sell that and get the M10.
Well, everything's
M10 monochrome.
Black and white. It's just, I don't know, it's just more... there's just something about it with color. It's kind of like, yeah, but with black and white, it just has like those emotions, I feel like you can get with it.
And it's crazy that you mentioned that, because a lot of people ask me, why do you shoot black and white? I have a friend that has like a, he has a Hasselblad, which is a medium format camera. And that's when you see billboards. They usually shoot them on medium format because of the pixels and how big the sensor is. And, you know, we both like black and white, but, you know, people would ask me, why are you shooting black and white? And, you know, I was like, I feel like with black and white, you imprint your own image onto it. You know, the colors aren't there popping, telling you where to draw your eye. You know, when you look at color, you know, we can bring up this red, bring down that, you know, that green, and we want you to look at the flower that's red and not the stem.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas black and white, you know, it may not be the flower, it may be the person in the background, you know, getting into their car that draws you. And with black and white, you kind of paint your own image when you look at it. I think that's what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, I'm trying to get the words out, but yeah, very beautiful. Well, and you have your artwork. Do you show it a lot on Instagram? Or
I do. And you know what, guys? I get it all the time. You know, my team is like, Brooks, we only get like 150 likes on your photos, but when you take your shirt off, we get 1,000. So let's get more shirt off. And you know, it's kind of disheartening sometimes,
you know,
because I'm like, I don't always want to peel my shirt off. Sometimes it's cold. Sometimes I didn't work out properly. You know, the abs ain't banging like they're supposed to be. I eat chocolate. You know, so I want to post my art. And, you know, my team's like, nobody really cares. So, no, I don't have anywhere I post it other than online. I print a lot, but it kind of just stays in the house for me. I'm kind of guilty of just kind of hoarding my own art.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. It makes it more personal, though.
Yeah, but you got to, you know,
you got to
put it out there and you know, and get the feedback. And so I have to do that a lot more. But it just, you know, you have to go there and you have to work with the designer and, you know, what colors you want to bring up and what, you know, with monochrome, there's so much that goes into printing. And
so is this something that you want to try to explore more in 2020 to get your artwork out?
Yeah. I would like to. There's actually a couple galleries that opened up around in Beverly Hills, you know, around where I live. And but it's just so competitive, man. And, you know, and with producing and acting, and it's just until I get, you know, an art agent, I forget what they're called, it's just not enough time in a day.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's just not enough time in the day. You know, but it I put it in the back of my mind. One day I'll get out there and push it a little bit more.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
I have faith.
Thank you.
So one of your dreams is creating your own scarf and fragrance line?
Yes.
Why is that?
Honestly, because it's a segue into designing more. I'm a big fragrance guy. Always have been, and before I knew that it was a thing, I would blend fragrances and figure out, okay, that doesn't smell good with that, but if I put this on now and then an hour later I put this on, it smells like this. And then if I, you know, put this oil on or bathe with this and then put this on and put that there and this, you know, and I would always get like, hey man, you smell so good, what is that? I'm like, dude, I can't even begin to tell you. I'm wearing like 6 different colognes and I put on it like 4 different times, and you know, and it just that and scarves are just, I really only started wearing scarves because my neck was cold and I hated my neck being cold.
Good point. I can see because you have the scarf on right now.
Yeah. And it's chilly. It's, you know, it was 80 last week. It's 60 this week. And you know, I get made fun of a lot because I wear scarves. And even Tamira made fun of me. She's like, Brooks, it's 70 degrees in August. What are you doing with the scarf on? I'm like, first of all, we're shooting a Christmas movie, so I have to wear a scarf.
I have the right.
Yeah. She was like, yeah, but we're not going to be shooting for like 2 hours. Why are you wearing a scarf? And I'm like, because I like scarves to wear. But yeah, I just like scarves. And then, you know, it's an accessory. Who doesn't like accessories, man?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't really wear too much jewelry. I have like a bangle on and I'll put a watch on it every now and then. But scarves are my thing, man.
I'm excited. Well, I can't wait to see the line come out.
Yeah, I don't know when. Again.
Near future.
Yeah. So you source fabrics and you figure out what you like. And I kind of like this like crepe fabric because it's light enough to wear in the summertime. But, you know, in the fall, it can also keep you warm.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, for me, it's about quality. You know, I don't want to just make something that looks good. I want it to be functional. And, you know, I think, you know, with cashmere is light,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you want to wear in the fall, but it's heavy enough that it's, you know, it warms you and keeps you, you know, it's breathable, whereas like some wool is like scratchy and it's crappy, but it costs $5. So I kind of want to figure out what's that fabric? What's that fabric that you have to go like to the jungles of Africa and find the silkworm that's only like 20 silkworms in the world. You know, I want to find that.
Well, you'll find it. Yeah. You'll find it. I'm excited for 2020 with you. You have some big projects coming up.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. So, a lot of work ahead, man.
It is.
A lot of work. I'm only sleeping like 5 hours a night now.
I know. I mean, between photography and then your projects coming up, working with Hallmark, and then these really cool series that you're going to be part of.
Yes.
Exciting.
Yes. Yes. Well, I didn't even tell you about the movies.
I know. Oh, my gosh. We have movies? We got to discuss that.
Yes. Yes.
I feel like we're going to do like an Instagram live because unfortunately we're out of time. We already hit our time limit.
We were here for 45 minutes?
I know. We were here for 45 minutes. I told you it goes by fast.
Yeah, you did. That's 45 minutes.
That was 45 minutes.
Okay.
Well, tell the folks where they can find you on Instagram or social media so that you could discuss the movies that you're going to be at soon.
Yes. At Twitter, Brooks Darnell. Instagram is at Sincerely Brooks Darnell.
Okay.
And Facebook is Brooks Darnell. And I think that's all the social media I have.
Okay. Well, if we have movies, I'm going to have to get you back in studio soon.
Yeah. Listen, man, I'm literally 20 minutes away. Call me anytime. I'll come up. I kind of like the setup here. It's pretty cool, man. It's easy.
Any projects, let us know.
All right. Will do. Will do.
And then you can find me on Instagram at Chelsea Overrocker and on Twitter at Chels Overrocker. Thank you guys so much for joining us for Spotlight On Interview. And make sure to subscribe to AfterBuzz TV to catch more interviews as well. Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.